RadioInfluence.com.
Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210 stories, office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of...
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion. A lot of smoke come out of the top.
110 stories high. They are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out,
you take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
Media is the...
You take the red
nervous
pill.
Nervous system of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy can't pill. Function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You have to let it all go.
Take the red pill.
Fear.
911truth.org.
Doubt.
WhatReallyHappened.com.
You disbelieve.
WTC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
Ready to do this. Testing 1, 2, 3. Welcome to another trip down the yellow brick road, the rabbit hole, and all the other euphemisms that everybody throws in. It's funny because, I've seen so many memes on social media over the last couple of years. You know, you see like Alice peeking behind the curtain, and of course there's the stream. That makes up the Matrix in the movies every time they show what the Matrix looks like on a computer. There's all this cross-pollination of critical thinking going on. And that's the best part of all of this, is if I felt like this was the only broadcast, and by the way, the intro you heard, if you're not familiar with this show, if you're new to it, the intro that's playing right now, I actually built and played in 2004, as I talked about some of the anomalies of 9/11 on a clear channel station, 100,000-watt FM, classic rock station, called Thunder 103.5. I did afternoon drive there. Didn't go over so well with the suits. I had been a below-the-radar jock for 24 years. Just doing afternoons, knocking it out, Rock 102 in Springfield, Mass., worked down at Zeta in Miami, over here at XTB, and then TBT, and then, of course, my conscience kicked in, and I said, seriously, is it just me, or does anybody else remember, like, ninth grade physics? Inertia, the law of conservation of momentum. Modern buildings don't do that. That's why they're made of steel. It's like a heat sink. It transfers the heat, spreads it out, keeps it safe. Not one, not two, but three buildings. Most people don't even know what Building 7 means. Believe me, it means a lot. If you are willing to look at things with a clear mind. Now, if you're going to keep your paradigm, you keep your little bubble going, you're listening to the wrong show. Don't listen to this podcast. Go listen to something that is all entertainment all the time. I'm going to give you half here. We're going to have a good time as we peek into the rabbit hole. And we talk all topics here on Dangerous Conversation. Including sex. I can't wait to get to the sex talk. The best part. I get to talk. We've got a sexologist we'll have on. Most of the guests will be after the first of the year. People have holidays and families, and I try not to book a lot of guests in December, even though I'm relaunching a show here. It doesn't work. It's best to just open. All I'm doing now is opening up the lines of communication. Hey, the show's back. I'm on two networks now, and Wednesday night I'm on this cool plateau called RadioInfluence.com, working with a lot of radio professionals who have been shown the door. So tonight we're going to talk. We're going to revisit me real quick. I already gave you that setup. 2004 things. I started to realize that I was not valued in the building anymore. that the idea of me actually using the public airwaves to publicly ask a question about the biggest event in the history of everyone who was alive at that time didn't go over well with the guys down the hallway. And ever since then, my phone doesn't ring. People are afraid of someone who has a lot of time behind a microphone, was born with a little gift of gab. I spent 35 years doing this, and guess what? Guess what I'm doing now? I'm saying, I think that's bullshit. I think that's bullshit. I think that's the absolute truth. And by the way, what I've done in the last 10 years, I've evolved, and hopefully I will continue to evolve. I don't make my mind up very quickly on things. I like to let them play themselves out. The more information, the better. The more, a little bit more time you have to come to a conclusion about something, which is the internet, which is the opposite of what happens on the internet now. Everyone's got everything figured out 24 hours after an event happens. And I'm like, man, you are doing yourself a disservice. You don't have to come to a conclusion. Go gather your information. Look for some. And this is what I talked about last week on this show. Look for that local TV network covering an event. Look for two or three of them, because they're going to broadcast something once live. I love the idea that lots of these events are being TiVo'd. I'm intrigued by that. I don't like the idea that trucks and cameras are headed to places where people have lost their lives through horrific events. It's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is people are gathering information, and they're sharing it. And then hopefully at the end of that sharing, they'll create a mini doc. You want to know what happened in San Bernardino? So do I. I don't know what happened yet. I know what the official story is that I've been told. And now as I look all over the internet, I see people coming to conclusions in 24 hours. And I'm sorry, you lose me. That's where you lose me. Because if you were to just step away from yourself and look back at yourself, you go, wow, what's the hurry? Oh, is it like I want to be the first one to be right about something, or I want to be the first one to call bullshit? It's like it's a contest. It's not a contest. You're coming to serious conclusions about a serious event. Take your time. Because I don't see a lot of backtracking. You know, like when a newspaper has to print a retraction, they always put it on page 20. Same thing on social media. Everybody's got an, oh, this is what's, you know what? Just ask some open-ended questions and say, you know, type the IMO. In my opinion, this is what I think happened. I can't completely prove it, but it does discount the original story. And that's a good place to start. Man, I got so much audio to get to. A lot of it. The best place to start is, I don't know. Excuse me. A, I don't know. And B, whatever the official story is, just put it to the side. Like, put it on the back burner. And the reason I'm going to play some of this audio tonight is you're going to realize that your opinions you come to, you watch CNN for 20 seconds. You pick up USA Today. You see it there at the bus station. You're driving to work and the taxi guy has on WABC in New York. You do realize that a lot of those major media corporations are owned by five companies now. And do you think they might possibly get into some collusion? Do you think that they might possibly be connected to, oh, I don't know, war profiteering? So the whole idea is, I get it, be discerning. Look through whatever it is, whatever the item, the event that's actually taking place, and do it. Be discerning, you know? You know, I have the windows open, by the way. It's just Florida in the fall. It's just so nice. This is not a studio. This is out on the ledge studios in my bedroom. And I refuse to just have an air conditioning on when it's so gorgeous out. So someone's playing some tunes or something. I think you can hear it. I don't know. And my dog is, you know, could you possibly make any more noise over there, GT? He's like, ah, Dad, I'm going to lick my crotch. Leave me alone. So be discerning. Sure, be discerning. You know, it's like, you know, I'm not sure yet. And if you can come to, and this is the next level. You start to discover enough anomalies in an event. compared to the original story, you can now call the original story a lie, a fabrication, especially the cover-ups. The cover-ups are always bigger than the crimes. We all know that. But the whole idea is you can't get to that level three going, not only is I'm in discernment, that's one. Two is in the middle. Now I realize there's enough bullshit surrounding this story that I can come to a conclusion, at least one. And I can now conclude that the official story is bullshit. But to get to level three, you'd have to have all your information. Now that you're saying the official story is a lie, what are you going to replace it with? And this is what the internet is full of. Speculators. I like it. It's good. It's kind of like a bunch of Sherlock Holmes all hanging out on the web. It can get a little egotistical, though. Because if you become an absolutist on any of this stuff, you're going to trap yourself in a corner. You're going to paint yourself in a corner. Don't do that. Just say, you know what? We know the official story is a lie. Now we're working to piece together a puzzle. And maybe, you know, people are still trying to do that with Sandy Hook. Lots of people still doubt the official story. People are still doubting, obviously, you know, the Boston bombing. There are lots of people out there doubting. But until you get hardcore evidence, and that's a combination of live footage, expert analysis of that live footage, hopefully in high def. That's really what helped the 9/11 truth movement, was the high definition of the towers collapsing so they could slow-mo them and really get some scientific looking at what was visually happening on that, including the speed of collapse and all that stuff, the physics. It was that evidence that helped form architects and engineers for 9/11 truth. A large group of very, very talented engineers, architects, designers who build skyscrapers for a living. And now they're out there using their expertise. But they're still not saying, oh, we absolutely know what happened, though we have found thermite in the dust. We have found the result of melted steel, little tiny balls, like when you see the welder and you see the sparks flying off, those are little tiny balls of steel because they're leaving at melted temperatures. And then, of course, they good old gravity takes over, or surface tension, and they form tiny little microspheres. The 9/11 dust was full of that, meaning lots of steel get melted. 9% of that dust was microspheres of melted iron. That's scientific evidence. So now you can say, well, judging from what we saw, the buildings and their collapse almost at free fall speed, in the pile of evidence that we did get to look at, we actually have, yes, a thermogenic device, which is nanothermite, and, of course, the actual result of that, which is the microspheres, and, then of course, the melted steel in the pools, little by little, evidence, 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 evidence. So there's a double-edged sword here, because guess what? When you and I are trying to be discerning about an event, what do? We look for stories. Where are the stories? They're on the internet. What are most of those stories from? The mainstream media. So that's what I mean when you're just looking at live footage. You're not looking at something that's been edited. And we know, wow, how many of these so-called news organizations have been caught editing everything from politicians' speeches to events in Missouri to, you know, all kinds of stuff. You know, they are beyond shady. They are beyond shady now. They have no couth at all. They know, we know they're bullshitters. We know mainstream media is bought and paid for. And we're going to get into this now. But I think it's time we go to class first, because we're going to have a little fun with a couple. You might have heard them before. They're out of Conan O'Brien's show. And, well, we got a lot of stuff, but I don't think we'll be able to get to that and that. So her name is Cheryl Atkinson. And Cheryl used to work for CBS News. And much like I'll mention someone else that kind of got pushed aside. Actually, she quit. Her name is Amber Lyon. I don't know if I mentioned Amber last week. No, Amber was a field reporter for CNN, and she went to many, many Middle Eastern places and covered war from both sides of the story. In other words, she actually went into the, quote, terrorist, unquote, camps and got the other side of the story in Yemen. And she put together a documentary that was about 90 minutes long that was supposed to run on CNN Europe. Well, they pulled it. It never ran. And that's when she realized that no matter what type of news she was going to gather, which is great, two sides of the same story is awesome news. No, CNN rejected it, and she quit. Now, she's on a different path. We'll have her on, but that's a different conversation. But she's doing some amazing stuff on her website as people are looking into all types of hallucinogenics for therapies and cures. Completely different conversation, but we'll have her on. So Amber Lyon is an example of what Cheryl Atkinson is, too. Now, Cheryl, like I said, let me see if I can cue this up. I think it starts with music. It's actually a TED Talk. If you've never heard a TED Talk, they're no more than 15 minutes long. And they are usually someone with something very interesting to say. And sometimes these TED Talks get under the radar of the big boys monitoring mainstream media, especially when somebody goes rogue. When someone leaves the mainstream media and knows they're not going back, that's when they have a tendency to talk about things. Now, we're going to hear from Jane Acree a little later about a huge story that actually took place here in Tampa. But I think Cheryl's mentioning of what is going on, not just in mainstream media, but on social media, this is a great lesson here. It's a good little talk. We'll do some stop and start on it, but let's let it roll for a little while. Here we go.
So, consider this fictitious example that's inspired by real life. Say you're watching the news and you see a story about a new study on the cholesterol-lowering drug called Cholextra. The study says Cholextra is so effective that doctors should consider prescribing it to adults and even children who don't yet have high cholesterol. Is it too good to be true? You're smart. You decide to do some of your own research. You do a Google search. You consult social media, Facebook and Twitter. You look at Wikipedia, WebMD, a nonprofit website. And you read the original study in a peer-reviewed published medical journal. It all confirms how effective Cholextra is. You do run across a few negative comments and a potential link to cancer, but you dismiss that because medical experts call the cancer link a myth and say that those who think there is a link there are quacks and cranks and nuts. Finally, you learn that your own doctor recently attended a medical seminar. The lecture that he attended confirmed how effective Cholextra is. So he sends you off with some free samples and a prescription. You've really done your homework. But what if all isn't as it seems? What if the reality you found was false? A carefully constructed narrative by unseen special interests designed to manipulate your opinion. A Truman Show-esque alternate reality all around you. Complacency in the news media combined with incredibly powerful propaganda and publicity forces mean we sometimes get little of the truth. Special interests have unlimited time and money to figure out new ways to spin us while cloaking their role. Surreptitious astroturf methods are now more important to these interests than traditional lobbying of Congress. There's an entire industry built around it in Washington.
Amazing what she mentions right there. The idea, because I think, you know, I'm a little bit older. What am I thinking? I'm thinking lobbyists. You know, you pay some guy $400,000 a year to go to Washington and bribe as many people as he can to take your corporations, whatever it is that you're trying to either hide from the public, get around the public, or just literally ram down the public's throat and buy yet another politician. We all know that. We're not naive. You listen to a show like this, you're not naive. And what she said here is, now that they have so many avenues, including you click on WebMD, you click on Wikipedia, you click on those type of things, aren't you thinking to yourself that there is no filter here, that a company isn't trying to push a drug down my throat? Well, yeah, we're wrong about that.
What is AstroTurf? It's a perversion of grassroots, as in fake grassroots. AstroTurf is when political, corporate, or other special interests disguise themselves and publish blogs, start Facebook and Twitter accounts, publish ads, letters to the editor, or simply post comments online to try to fool you into thinking an independent or grassroots movement is speaking. The whole point of AstroTurf is to try to give the impression there's widespread support for or against an agenda when there's not. AstroTurf seeks to manipulate you into changing your opinion by making you feel as if you're an outlier when you're not.
You ever been in that situation where you just post something and out of nowhere comes four or five people like mosquitoes at a picnic just coming around you and boom, 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 just coming at you with the same old rhetoric and, oh, this has been debunked and nothing like that. And you ask yourself, who are these people? You know, is it really John Smith? Because doing media as I have, I'm not a huge Facebook guy. I'm not a huge Twitter guy. But I do realize that there's a two-way street with that. I love the live feedback from doing live radio. And I also realize it's a great mechanism to let listeners know what I'm up to, what's coming up on the show. And sometimes, eventually, even after the show kind of comments, well, we'll keep a guest on to answer questions on Twitter, things like that. So I love the mechanisms. But the idea that, you know, you can have 20 Twitter accounts under, you know, completely fictitious names. Okay, you know, I get it. You're living in mom's basement. I get that. Now let's take it to the next level, where private corporations and companies are hiring people to sit at a computer and literally, for probably some pretty damn good money, go online and harass a truth seeker. Because they are kind of like flies to shit. They seem to show up all the time, don't they? They really do.
One example is the Washington Redskins name. Without taking a position on the controversy, if you simply were looking at news media coverage over the course of the past year or looking at social media, you'd probably have to conclude that most Americans find that name offensive and think it ought to be changed. But what if I told you 71% of Americans say the name should not be changed? That's more than two-thirds. AstroTurfers seek to controversialize those who disagree with them. They attack news organizations that publish stories they don't like, whistleblowers who tell the truth, politicians who dare to ask the tough questions, and journalists who have the audacity to report on all of it. Sometimes AstroTurfers simply shove intentionally so much confusing and conflicting information into the mix that you're left to throw up your hands and disregard all of it, including the truth. Drown out a link between a medicine and a harmful side effect, say vaccines and autism, by throwing a bunch of conflicting paid-for studies, surveys, and experts into the mix, confusing the truth beyond recognition. And then there's Wikipedia, AstroTurf's dream come true. Billed as the free encyclopedia that anyone can edit, the reality can't be more different. Anonymous Wikipedia editors control and co-opt pages on behalf of special interests. They forbid and reverse edits that go against their agenda. They skew and delete information in blatant violation of Wikipedia's own established policies with impunity, always superior to the poor schlubs who actually believe anyone can edit Wikipedia, only to discover they're barred from correcting even the simplest factual inaccuracies.
I've never tried. Have you tried? I didn't feel, you know what, I don't care enough about this post to go in and change it and correct it. I really don't care. But there are people that live for this. And as we're learning from Cheryl Atkinson here, former CBS News anchorwoman and reporter, field reporter, that, yeah, there are people that get paid to do this stuff. Paid. Now, they're not always sitting in some bunker in the CIA. It might just be, you know, so-and-so's cable company, blah, 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 down the street. And everybody just thinks Joe right there in the cubicle next to him is just sending out the billing assets and blah, blah, blah. But he's actually a plant inside somewhere where he can track IP addresses and hassle people. I find it fascinating that they're so worried about a growing public opinion that is now declaring bullshit, that all of this is going on. But as we'll learn a little later when we listen to Jane Acree and her producer tell their story, which is almost 30 years old now, 25 years old, that this has been going on a while. But let's listen a little bit more. This is where she gets into a little bit more about Wikipedia, literally. Well, I'll let her say it. Here we go.
Try adding a footnoted fact or correcting a fact error on one of these monitored Wikipedia pages and poof, sometimes within a matter of seconds, you'll find your edit is reversed. In 2012, famed author Philip Roth tried to correct a major fact error about the inspiration behind one of his book characters cited on a Wikipedia page. But no matter how hard he tried, Wikipedia's editors wouldn't allow it. They kept reverting the edits back to the false information. When Roth finally reached a person at Wikipedia, which was no easy task, and tried to find out what was going wrong, they told him he simply was not considered a credible source on himself.
It's like only a corporation could say that to you, you know? You're on the phone with someone, you go, no, I can prove I'm mean, blah, 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 and you do it, and they go, well, Mr. Jones, you know, you're just not a valid opinion about yourself. I think people here over at Wikipedia have a far better grasp of who you are as a person. It's an example. I mean, it's funny, but it's also an example of the things we take for granted that are bastions of truth, you know, especially Wikipedia. It used to be called the Fourth Estate. And then Julian Assange is now, the movie was called the Fifth Estate. Pretty soon there'll be a Sixth Estate where people have to watch the watchers who are watching the watchers, you know.
A few weeks later, there was a huge scandal when Wikipedia officials got caught offering a PR service that skewed and edited information on behalf of paid, publicity-seeking clients in utter opposition to Wikipedia's supposed policies. All of this may be why, when a medical study looked at medical conditions described on Wikipedia pages and compared it to actual peer-reviewed published research, Wikipedia contradicted medical research 90% of the time. You may never fully trust what you read on Wikipedia again, nor should you. Let's now go back to that fictitious Kolextra example and all the research you did. It turns out the Facebook and Twitter accounts you found that were so positive were actually written by paid professionals hired by the drug company to promote the drug. The Wikipedia page had been monitored by an agenda editor also paid by the drug company. The drug company also arranged to optimize Google search engine results, so it was no accident that you stumbled across that positive nonprofit that had all those positive comments. The nonprofit was, of course, secretly founded and funded by the drug company. The drug company also financed that positive study and used its power of editorial control to omit any mention of cancer as a possible side effect. Once more, each and every doctor who publicly touted Kolextra or called the cancer link a myth or ridiculed critics as paranoid cranks and quacks or served on the government advisory board that approved the drug, each of those doctors is actually a paid consultant for the drug company. As for your own doctor, the medical lecture he attended that had all those positive evaluations was, in fact, like many continuing medical education classes, sponsored by the drug company. And when the news reported on that positive study, it didn't mention any of that. I have tons of personal examples from real life. A couple of years ago, CBS News asked me to look into a story about a study coming out from the nonprofit National Sleep Foundation. Supposedly, this press release coming out said, the study concluded we're a nation with an epidemic of sleeplessness and we don't even know it, and we should all go ask our doctors about it.
Do you have restless leg syndrome, too? Because they usually like to pile on as they make these things up, because they have a pill sitting on a counter that does something like, well, it makes your legs relax. Okay, that's all it does? Yeah, it makes your legs relax. All right, so we have to ask people that have, like, tired legs and restless legs. And then we have to go to doctors and have them create something called restless leg syndrome. And then, oh, pure genius. Pure genius. You like the Kids in the Hall, by the way? Any of you listening? Kids in the Hall? Find Brain Candy on Netflix and watch it. Made in the mid-90s, man. They nailed it. They absolutely nailed it. Please continue, Ms. Atkinson.
A couple of things struck me about that. First, I recognize the phrase, ask your doctor, as a catchphrase promoted by the pharmaceutical industry. They know that if they can get your foot through the door of the doctor's office to mention a malady, you're very likely to be prescribed the latest drug that's marketed. Second, I wondered how serious an epidemic of sleeplessness could really be if we don't even know that we have it. Right? It didn't take long for me to do a little research and discover that the National Sleep Foundation nonprofit and the study, which was actually a survey, not a study,
was funded by any big-time gamblers out there? Come on. Say it. Big Pharma?
We're sponsored in part by a new drug that was about to be launched onto the market called Lunesta, a sleeping pill. I reported the study as CBS News asked, but of course I disclosed the sponsorship behind the nonprofit and the survey so that viewers could weigh the information accordingly. All the other news media reported the same survey directly off the press release as written without digging past the superficial. It later became an example written up in the Columbia Journalism Review, which quite accurately reported that only we at CBS News had bothered to do a little bit of research and disclose the conflict of interest behind this widely reported survey. So now you may be thinking, what can I do? I thought I'd done my research. What chance do I have separating fact from fiction, especially if seasoned journalists with years of experience can be so easily fooled? Well, I have a few strategies that I can tell you about to help you recognize signs of propaganda and astroturf.
No, we're not going to get to those tonight, guys. Sorry. Oh, yeah, I'm just fucking with you.
Once you start to know what to look for, you'll begin to recognize it everywhere. First, hallmarks of astroturf include use of inflammatory language such as crank, quack, nutty, lies, paranoid, pseudo, and conspiracy.
Oh, wait a minute. I want to go back. That's kind of like a greatest hits collection for me. I'm not kidding. It's, you know?
Could weigh the information accordingly.
Here we go.
All the other news media reported the same survey directly off the press release as written without digging past the superficial.
I jump back too far.
It later became an example written up in the Columbia Journalism Review, which quite accurately reported that only we at CBS News had bothered to do a little bit of research and disclose the conflict of interest behind this widely reported survey. So now you may be thinking,
am I the only one having deja vu right now?
Could weigh the information accordingly. All the other news media reported the same survey directly off the press release as written without digging past the superficial. It later became an example written up in the Columbia Journalism Review, which quite accurately reported that only we at CBS News had bothered to do a little bit of research and disclose the conflict of interest behind this widely reported survey.
Here we go.
So now you may be thinking, what can I do?
Yeah.
I thought I'd done my research. What chance do I have separating fact from fiction, especially if seasoned journalists with years of experience can be so easily fooled? Well, I have a few strategies that I can tell you about to help you recognize signs of propaganda and astroturf. Once you start to know what to look for, you'll begin to recognize it everywhere.
I'm with that. And you can't. You know what I equate it to? The many scenes in The Matrix when they walk up and they've got the control panel of computer screens and whoever's, you know, maybe it's Cypher or Switch or all these different characters, Mouse, I'm trying to remember all the different characters that actually, you know, sat there and were on duty watching The Matrix. In other words, you could see it for what it was. I couldn't see it. All I saw was a green screen with a bunch of symbols running down from top to bottom on the screen, just, you know, thousands of them per second, probably at least. But they were so in tune to what all those symbols meant that their mind could actually put a picture. That's when Cypher goes, all I see is blonde, brunette, redhead. And it's the same thing when you start to become a critical thinker and you start to ask questions. You are very used to hearing the same descriptive words used to describe you because they don't want to get into an actual in-depth conversation where you might actually come with something like, I don't know, evidence. And they'd rather just it's much easier just to label you, you know, the conspiracy theorist is the big one now. Mainstream media uses that all the time. If you have a question about the 7/7 bombings, or if you want to go back and look at Oklahoma City, you're not a critical thinker. You're not someone that's looking for scientific evidence. By the way, CSI, how many fucking CSIs are there on television right now? What are they about? Forensic science and evidence solving crimes. We got tons of forensic studies on TV. We don't have any of them in real life situations. So people have to slowly piece together information. And they get called a list of names like this.
What to look for, you'll begin to recognize it everywhere. First, hallmarks of astroturf include use of inflammatory language such as crank, quack, nutty, lies, paranoid, pseudo, and conspiracy. Astroturfers often claim to debunk myths that that aren't myths at all. Use of the charge language tests well. People hear something's a myth, maybe they find it on Snopes, and they instantly declare themselves too smart to fall for it. But what if the whole notion of the myth is itself a myth, and you and Snopes fell for that?
See? People wonder why I like the Matrix movie. You know, because people have a tendency to watch movies based on an actor's performance or a special effect or a storyline. There are some amazing rabbit hole-ish questions about the Matrix. What if this Matrix isn't real? Well, then what would be the real one? And then why does this exist? And so on and so forth. And I think somebody like a TV reporter like Cheryl Atkinson, you get to realize that, yeah, you're going to be looking into places that might lead you to yet another tunnel. And the instinctive part of the reporter wants to go there, but now their bosses won't let them. So it really is recognizing what we can do to help people like this. And we're going to get to a Jane Akrey story next. Actually, we're going to do some Conan audio next, then the Jane Akrey story. Got a lot of stuff to get to tonight.
Beware when interests attack an issue by controversializing or attacking the people, personalities, and organizations surrounding it rather than addressing the facts.
They always personalize their attacks. Always. It doesn't take long on my Facebook page. When I get into attack, someone will, you know, the conspiracy theory comes out. They will make it about you rather than what you are talking about. You know, it's kind of like stay focused, stay on target. Use the force, Luke. Stay on target. When you're having those conversations, they will do everything they can to make it about you. They personalize those attacks. And she's not kidding. Believe me, I've had many, both public and private ones, online, private messages, emails, those kind of things, which, by the way, eventually all they do is validate you. Later on, at first they kind of beat you up a little, but then later on you just become just like a badge of honor. Yeah, that's me, conspiracy guy.
That could be AstroTurf. And most of all, AstroTurfers tend to reserve all of their public skepticism for those exposing wrongdoing rather than the wrongdoers. In other words, instead of questioning authority, they question those who question authority.
Isn't that interesting? If you're so damned worried about a better world, why aren't you putting all of your energies into not bothering me on Twitter and actually going after what you think or what the, you know, fix it? Why are you coming after me? I want it fixed. And that's when you start to realize there is an agenda. Well, okay, now that we know, let me erase Cheryl's here. I'm playing them all off the same editor. And it's just much easier to just remove the block. There we go. Now, let me see. I'll play the longer one. I'm only going to play one of these two Conans. You might have seen these on the internet. They were pretty prevalent last summer, and I believe a little bit before that. But to be honest with you, even though I did play some of this stuff on my previous Dangerous Conversation at Radio IO, and I'm going to make several points here. We'll have some fun with it because it is goofy. But the bottom line is, television networks are exactly that. If a company owns 28 stations, those anchor people, 6 o'clock, I'm John Wilson, and whoever the guy is in your town, all those people get the same fucking scripts. They don't, you know, I mean, there might be a local story that they do, but anytime they're talking about something outside of their television market, and this is the beauty of it. And the setup was kind of neat. I didn't realize what it was all about, but you know what? Let's do it justice. This was Conan O'Brien not too long ago, and we'll let it roll right up to when he get. Actually, the setup runs a little long here, but it's actually a good story. Yeah.
We've made a little bit of news this week. I don't know if you've heard about this, but I'll tell you why. It's because on our...
Essentially, Conan is in... he's either in L.A. or New York. It's the week he did the live show, like Letterman's done before, you know, from a theater for the entire, all five shows of that week. And I believe, I don't know if he's in L.A. and he was in New York or vice versa, but I'll let it roll. So now you know what's going on there.
Last New York show, which is tomorrow night, we're going to perform a wedding right here on this stage. Now, I'm not talking about a comedy bit. I'm talking about a real, legally binding, same-sex marriage between our show's costume designer, Scott Cronick, and his partner, David Gorshine. Now, is this going to happen? Yeah. There they are. That's how it happened. Same-sex marriage isn't allowed in California, so Scott and David were going to get married during our week in New York. And I thought instead of them getting married at City Hall, why not get married right here on the stage of the Beacon and do it right? Now, this will be the first, I believe, same-sex wedding ever performed on late-night television, and we're all very excited about it. Best of all, I am going to officiate the wedding myself. Now,
you know, this is kind of old news, but you'll see, obviously.
I'm pretty good.
You probably heard the audio.
I'm using that for everything now, yeah. So anyway, we announced this. News stations around the country have picked up on this story, and each one is putting its own unique spin on it.
Okay, before I get to this funny little montage, and if you've heard it before, just, you know, play along with us here at home. Let's just say that sometimes when I was working at a rock station in the early 80s and the teletype machine, you know, literally that loud teletype machine that was outside the studio in the hallway would be going off, that would be coming from, you know, UPI or AP, Associated Press, or whoever. And that was a story that was sent to all of those affiliates. So we used to call it rip and read. You'd rip that copy right off the machine. You'd go right in and say, unfortunately, John Lennon, you know, I remember that night. I was working across the hallway at the time. And remember when Peter DeLauro, or, you know, it was Peter DeLauro had to say, read the copy that John Lennon had been shot. Well, that copy had been circulated to all the affiliates of ABC News or AP or whatever that was. So we have the same scenario in modern technology. We have affiliates. And especially since they've downsized and gotten rid of a lot of the manpower in television and radio, you get a lot more rip and read. You get a lot more of that. That's one side of this. In other words, you know, hey, it's no big deal. They all get the same copy delivered to them. And some decide to go with it because it's a funny story or their affiliate of the show or whatever the situation is. The scary part of this is, listen to this, and now picture it rather than them just talking about Conan. What if they were telling you about a terrorist event that may or may not have happened, and everybody gets the same copy, and everybody says the same thing? This is a lighthearted look at that, but it is a two-headed, it's a two-sided coin here.
Talk show host Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be able to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien...
Every one of these is a separate TV station.
...may be about to push the envelope on his late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien,
maybe. Is that a laugh track? Sounds like a laugh track. Because he's a live theater, and all of a sudden I'm hearing, like, studio laugh tracks.
About to push the envelope on late-night TV.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late-night television.
Conan O'Brien
obviously, it literally is like beating the dead horse of a joke. It just, the more you play it, the more irritating it gets, the funnier it gets. I love it. But it's also scary. Now, picture that as someone saying that there was some biological terrorist germ spread and everyone's cowering in their houses all over the world, all over the country, and it's bullshit. That's how easy it is to get everyone in lockstep.
Maybe about to push the envelope once again on late night TV.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien is looking to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night TV.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
Conan O'Brien may be about to push the envelope on late night television.
O'Brien may be about to push the envelope. On late-night television.
It's kind of like being tickled. At first it's funny, and then it doesn't tickle anymore, and you get pissed. Cut it out! Stop it! It's not funny! I'm not laughing! Now, just think about that for a second. Just a little piece of copy, maybe 30 words, 40 words, gets delivered to some news editor fresh out of college. She hands it to her director. He looks at it. It has the official logo of something on it. He hands it to the other guy. That guy hands it to that person. It ends up in the teleprompter, and out it comes to your television. What if they want you to think one thing instead of another? And that's rhetorical, because they do. That's how it works. That's why five companies own everything you see, hear, or read. And that includes your internet provider, who so graciously, at least at this point, has to tolerate shows like this one. Someday, I'm sure, there'll be a knock on the door. Sir, did you play this song during your podcast? Well, that's protected under copyright laws, and we're sorry, but we're going to have to shut down and take your gear. You think I'm joking? We have protest zones in our country right now. You know where my protest zone is? It's, let me see, it's situated right in between my index finger and my ring finger. And I seem to have two of them. That's my protest zone. This country is headed into a Orwellian weirdness that I never thought. I read that in ninth grade. Yeah, you got to read 1984. Oh, another boring book. I'd rather just go to keg parties and play soccer. Christ, Mr. Trout, why the fuck do I have to read this stupid book? Doesn't make any sense. The war, endless war, and there's, everybody's being watched through their TVs. And oops. Conan had fun with that. But that's, I just want to plant that seed. Because we're going to get to another, here's an oldie but a goodie. There's a little side story in this one, too. I believe this is either from a movie called The Corporation or Outfoxed, but I found the video I wanted. Steve, I can't remember his last name, is one of the producers. Jane Akery's the anchor lady who literally worked here in this market. This podcast originates out of the Tampa St. Pete market. They worked for a Fox affiliate. This is back when I first moved here. It's late 80s, early 90s. And this is a really well done piece together of audio. In other words, obviously there's pictures here, but it really does make for great audio for radio because of the editing and the storytelling. So I don't like the idea that my show is going to run through 10 minutes of audio nonstop. I will kind of come in on bits and pieces here, but this is self-explanatory. What you have here is you're now going to see the pressure from a corporation that doesn't even own a television station that they can apply to a television station because that television station is part of a network and threaten to remove millions of dollars of advertising unless they pull a story that the news department of a local TV station was working on. Check this one out. This is a good one.
Made a little bit of news this week.
In a world economy where information is filtered by global media corporations keenly attuned to their powerful advertisers, who will defend the public's right to know? And what price must be paid to preserve our ability to make informed choices?
It's got serious music. You know, it's serious.
What Fox Television told us was that we were just the people to be the investigators.
Do any stories you want, ask tough questions, and get answers. So we thought, this is great. This is a dream job. Fantastic. The very first thing they had us do was not to research stories, but to shoot this promo, which was the investigators.
Uncovering the truth, getting results.
I don't know who that guy is, but since I lived here and he was the voiceover guy for 13 or TBT or Fox, whatever it was called. There's been so many swappings of radio and TV property since I've lived here. But I remember that voiceover guy, the investigators.
Texting you.
And they had a film crew and a smoke machine, and we were silhouetted.
Investigative reporter Steve.
One of the first stories that Jane came up with was the revelation that most of the milk in the state of Florida and throughout much of the country was adulterated with the effects of bovine growth hormone, the artificial hormone that farmers were injecting into their cows so that they would produce more milk.
with Monsanto, I didn't realize how effectively a corporation could work to get something on the marketplace. The levels of coordination they had to have.
She's going to detail how many people have to be in lockstep with this corporation to get something pushed through. But the thing that blew my mind was the amount of time it took. Remember that we're talking about injecting cows with a hormone, basically a steroid, bovine growth hormone, like human growth hormone. Okay, it's a derivative of the actual growth hormone in cows, re-injected into a cow to get that cow to give more milk or put on more size or do both. Now check out, and she really does state it well here. She says, you know, to for a company to get something pushed through like this, with this many people eating cheese and milk and that many people dairy farming and that many people involved in all of those industries, including supermarkets and so on and everybody else, you just can't start sticking cows with stuff and hope it's okay. Don't you think you'd have to jump through a lot of hoops? And that's what she gets to here.
To get university professors into the fold. They had to get experts into the fold. They had to get reporters into the fold. They had to get the public into the fold. And of course, the FDA, let's not leave them out. They had to get the federal regulators convinced that this was a fine and safe product to get it onto the marketplace. And they did that. They did that very, very well.
It's a great time to be a high-producing cow. Posilac One Step, bovine somatotropin by Monsanto.
Certainly not a sexy name. You know, instead of like super milk, you know, it's just like it never made it to Madison Avenue. It was like just the literal chemical name of what it was for farmers to figure out instead of like, you know, super teat, double teat. I don't know. Just it made me laugh.
The federal government basically rubber stamped it before they put it on the marketplace. The longest test they did for human toxicity was 90 days on 30 rats.
Okay. All right, then. We're going to inject a bunch of cows across the nation with this. It's going to get into the milk. It's going to get into the meat. It's going to get into you. And we're going to test it for 90 fucking days. Excuse me. Oh, that's just us patting ourselves on the back for just doing such in-depth studies. 90 days they tested this stuff before it went into market. Do you think the federal government protects you? There's no such thing as the government. It's the same corporations disguised as the government. Where do you hear this story? This is, I'm familiar with this. But this has a lot to do with the pressures applied to media and the local people that cave and the pressure and the lawsuits. This is a fascinating story. I'm going to let it roll for a little while now that we're going.
Posilac is the single most tested new product in history and is now available to you specifically so you can increase your profit potential.
And then either Monsanto misreported the results to the FDA or the FDA didn't bother to look in depth at Monsanto's own studies.
The scientists within Health Canada looked very carefully at bovine growth hormone and came to very different conclusions than the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. did.
Monsanto's engineered growth hormone did not comply with safety requirements. It could be absorbed by the body and therefore did have implications for human health. Mysteriously, that conclusion was deleted from the final published version of their report.
They knew there were problems. They saw serious potential human health problems and they stood up in Canada and said, we're not going to approve this because we don't believe it's safe.
We have been pressured and coerced to pass drugs of questionable safety, including the RBST. I personally was very concerned that there's a very serious problem of secrecy, conspiracy, and things of that nature, and something needs to be done.
The FDA was then on
See what happens when a whistleblower comes out? That's what Atkinson was talking about. That's what the AstroTurfers will do. They'll go after you.
Hot seat. They had to come up with an answer. They didn't come up with a good one. And they never took the opportunity then. I mean, what would they do? Pull it off the market and say, we need to now do the job that we didn't do the first time? They didn't do that.
We wrote the story. We had it ready a week beforehand. They bought ads.
Farmers in the milk industry say it's safe, but studies suggest a link to cancer. Don't miss this special report from the investigator.
That Friday night before the Monday this series was to begin, the fax machine spit out a letter from this very high-priced lawyer in New York.
Fax machines. Remember those? You know, you're sitting there, you just ran your teasers, your Friday afternoon, Friday night teasers for your Monday report. The hard-hitting investigative report into bovine growth hormone comes up this Monday. In other words, you've now broadcast the teaser. And just minutes after that happens, the fax machine. You know the lawyers in New York were sitting there watching some feed or listening to something that could give them the feed of Fox TV down here in Tampa, and they were all over it, and quickly.
That Monsanto had hired, it contained a lot of things that were just off the wall false, just demonstrably false. But if you didn't know the story and you didn't know how we had gone about producing it, would have scared you as a broadcaster, as a manager.
And they decided that they would pull the story and they would just check it one more time.
But the
we're just gonna look it over one more time. This is where it gets good. I'm going to let this roll.
Bottom line was that there was no factual errors in that story. Both sides had been heard from. Both sides had had an opportunity to speak.
1 week later, Monsanto sent the second letter. And this was even more strongly worded. And it said there will be dire consequences for Fox News if the story airs in Florida. And this time they freaked. They were afraid of being sued, and they were also afraid of losing advertising dollars at all of the stations owned by Rupert Murdoch, and he owned more television stations than any other group in America. That's 22 television stations. That's
now, remember, by the way, this is the early 90s. This is actually, technically, this is before Clinton deregulates radio and television with the Telecommunications Act of 97. Where the ownership went through the roof, there were still quite a few television stations out there. And remember, Murdoch's empire, if you will, only included 22 at the time. Okay, I just want to say that because it still had some clout, but it's not what it is now. Now it's a juggernaut. Back then, lots of TV markets, lots of stations buying and selling. The regulation plans were still in place. So the feasting couldn't happen, and the giant media giants that we now know were five, there was actually as many as 40 or 50 around that time. So now we know what the time scale is here.
It's a lot of advertising dollars for Roundup, Aspartame, NutraSweet, and other products.
So we got into a battle, and the first deal was the new general manager.
And his name's Dave. And Dave is a salesman, and, you know, he'd pump your hand. How you doing? How you doing?
Called us upstairs.
Herb Tarlick.
And he said, what would you say if I killed this piece? What if it never ran? And we said, well, you know, we wouldn't be very happy about that. And he said, well, I could kill it, you know. And we said, yes, of course. You're the manager. You could kill it. It would never air. And he's hemming, and he's hawing, and he's back, and he's forth. And we couldn't figure out, what is this all about? And finally he blurted out, look, would you tell anybody? You know, I said, I'm not going to lie for you. About a week later, calls us back to the office and says, okay, we'd like you to make these changes. In fact, you will make these changes. We said, well, look, let us show you the research that we have that shows that this information you want us to broadcast isn't true. To which he replies, I don't care about that. I said, pardon me? And he said, well, that's what I have lawyers for. Just write it the way the lawyers want it written. I said, you know, this is news. This is important. This is stuff people need to know. And I'll never forget, he didn't pause a beat, and he said, we just paid $3 billion for these television stations. We'll tell you what the news is.
George Orwell was privy, just like Huxley was, to some information when they wrote their books. I don't know if it was the Masons and that type of stuff where people were talking about the eventual plans of a new world order, because a lot of what is in 1984 is coming to fruition. But it doesn't get here in a day. It's not just been the last year. This has been going on probably since they invented the damn teletype.
and the AP, and, you know, once the CIA showed up and they infiltrated the news organizations to try to get, you know, softer stories about Vietnam written versus the reality of that quagmire and horrific clusterfuck. On purpose, by the way. More profit in a longer war. But the idea that the media had been infiltrated never occurred to me as a kid. Because you'd always hear, you know, so-and-so radio station is signing off. And you'd always hear a bunch of different names. And this is in, again, this is early 90s. This story takes place. Fast forward to now, at 2015, we have five companies that every magazine you look at, every website, every link, every single app, almost every app, will link you to one of those five companies somehow. Thank God for the internet.
The news is what we say it is. I said, I'm not doing that. And he said, well, he said, if you refuse to present the story the way we think it should be presented, you'll be fired for insubordination. I said, I will go to the Federal Communications Commission and I will report that I was fired from my job by you, the licensee of these public airwaves, because I refused to lie to people on the air. And it's thank you very much. You'll hear from us right away. Well, 24 hours came and went, and we didn't hear a thing. And about a week later, he calls us back, and now we've changed strategies. How about if we pay you some money and you just go away? And I said, how much money? Because, you know, when somebody offers to bribe you like that, I always want to know if it might be worth it.
He was going to offer us the rest of our year's salary if we agreed not to talk about what Monsanto had done, to not talk about the Fox corporate response in suppressing the story, and to not talk about the story, not talk about BGH again, anywhere, not take the story to... And he said, are you going to sign? And we said, nah, Dave, we're not going to sign that. And he said, well, send it back, okay? I said, no, Dave, we're not going to send that back.
I'm going to send you some official paperwork that, if you sign it, essentially shuts you up. We have now silenced you. The public will not know the dangers of growth, bovine growth hormone that both Europe and Canada rejected. This report will never run. They will not know. And Monsanto will make lots of money, as well as farmers, by the way. Every single farmer who puts that in a cow and gets, you know, 2 gallons more a week or whatever it works out as, they have to assume responsibility too. Now, you know, some of them maybe were definitely lied to. Maybe they just got the, you know, the video promotion thing, the half hour presentation from Monsanto about it, and they lie about everything, about how safe it is, how long they tested it, whether there were any anomalies in the cows or the milk. You know, and you're farmer ed, and you're like, man, I can get, wow, that's 1,000 more gallons a week. And, you know, you do the math, and next thing you know, you're like, and how much does it cost? Okay, it costs $500 to buy the kit, and I'm going to get $5,000 more milk. That's just a guy taking care of his own ass. I get it. But he believes the company. And this is where, when you go up the pyramid, anywhere in power structures, you get to fewer and fewer people that are more and more corrupt. That's how it works. The story gets worse, not better. The story gets worse.
It was, okay, we can't buy you out. We can't shut you up. Let's get the story on the air in a way that we can all agree it will go on the air. And we started rewriting and editing with their lawyers.
Well, during this 8-month re-review process, I say, jokingly, they did things like, for example, they wanted to take out the word cancer. You don't have to identify what the potential problem is, but just say human health implications. Any criticism of Monsanto or its product, they either removed it or minimized it. And it was very, very clear, I would say, almost every edit they made to the piece, that was the aim.
And we changed this and this and this,
and then that wasn't good enough. Okay, now change this and this and this. Now change this and this. Version after version after version. 83 times.
83 times is...
That's called waiting you out. Just keep telling them to change it till the contract expires on when you can get rid of them legally. Is this not the playbook of a large corporation and an even larger corporation making them their bitch? Monsanto's like, yeah, well, we have aspartame sales and we have, you know, by the way, they have such a great track record, don't they? Almost everything that they manufacture that you put in you is not good for you, period. Even when you're not supposed to consume it. Look at the glyphosate conversation that's going on right now about Roundup. But they had billions of dollars of advertising. Fox had 22 stations. They're not going to kiss away probably at least a couple hundred million dollars in Monsanto advertising on 22 TV sticks because two reporters in Tampa refused to cave in. That is the power structure of what controls the things you see. And this is why this show is vital. Your opinions are based on what you've watched or looked at or read or heard about. Now ask yourself how much of that was the official story, the official mainstream media, the official radio station or television station. Do you go to alternative measures? Hopefully, if you listen to a show like this, you do. But I couldn't encourage you more to go find, like, you know, honestly, I watch Al Jazeera. I watch Russia Today. I watch the BBC. I watch Aussie TV because you get their opinion of us. Not completely unfiltered, but it gives me the chance to really form an opinion outside of the same five companies that control everything I see and hear. Again, including the internet I'm looking at right now, including that. We're just not dangerous enough for them yet. You know, we're not China. But how many times are people getting knocked off the internet or being banned off of Facebook for putting something controversial up? It's incremental. How a large multinational, that's the key phrase there, they're multinational corporations. They have no loyalty to you or your sovereign soil or your flag or your borders. They don't fucking care. All they care about is, what's the stock price? Where's this company growing? And the way to do that, in this country, is called war profiteering. It is the largest. It far outpaces automobiles. It far outpaces washing machine manufacturing. We are a warring nation. Because it is incredibly profitable. And the reason we're talking about the media controlling what you think and feel is because they're the same ones that convinced you who some bad guy was 8,000 miles away in a country you've never been to, in a society you know nothing about, in a history of a country you know nothing about, and you're okay with bombing them because your TV said it's okay. That's what this show is here to counter. We're not here to fucking blow smoke up your ass. We're here to say, seriously, don't show up and talk anything to me. Don't talk surface level politics to me. Not, because if you ask me a question, I go, well, that's about a 3-hour conversation. Ready to have it? Because if not, let's talk about the Buccaneers, they're 6-6. But if you're going to sit there and go, oh, Trump this and Obama that, I'm going to go, you have no idea who's pulling the strings. And that's what this show is not here to tell you about. It is here to make sure you understand it is taking place. There are powerful people behind the scenes. And they get what they want. But they get what they want because 90, maybe 80% of the populace, this is what tonight's show's about. They flip on the TV for half an hour, they watch the news, and they think they're informed. Or they sit there at the bus stop and read the front page of USA Today, and they think they're informed. You're not. You're not.
Unheard of. It doesn't happen. You shouldn't have to rewrite something 83 times. Obviously, they didn't want to put the thing on the air, and they were trying to drive us crazy and get us to quit or wait until the first window in our contract so that they could fire us.
They, in effect, announced that they were going to fire us for no cause. Well, this was a little much.
And Steve wrote a letter to the lawyer in Atlanta, whose name is Carolyn Forrest, the Fox corporate lawyer.
And I said, you know, this isn't about being fired for no cause. You're firing us because we refused to put on the air something that we knew and demonstrated to be false and misleading. That's what this is about. And because we put up a fight, because we stood up to this big corporation, and we stood up to your editors, and we stood up to your lawyers, and we said to you, look, there ought to be a principle higher than just making money.
And she wrote a letter back and said, you're right. That's exactly what it was. You stood up to us on this story, and that's why we're letting you go. Big mistake. Big mistake. That says retaliation. You can't retaliate against employees if they're standing up for something that they believe is illegal, that they don't want to participate in. So that gave us the whistleblower status that we needed in the state of Florida to file a whistleblower claim against our employer.
What Fox neglected to report is this. Jane sued Fox under Florida's whistleblower statute, which protects those who try to prevent others from breaking the law.
Oh, by the way, I really like your voice. You're going to love this one.
But her appeal court judges found that falsifying news isn't actually against the law.
Do we need to repeat that? The judges found that falsifying the news is not against the law in the state of Florida. That's right. We just make it up as we go along. Sometimes we talk about unicorns and shit. We get all kinds of crazy emails, but fuck it. We just make it up on our own, man. That's what we do.
So they denied Jane her whistleblower status, overturned the case, and withdrew her $425,000 award. Canada and Europe have upheld the ban on RBGH, yet it remains hidden in much of the milk supply of the United States.
It's like when someone talks like this and they're a female and they have a sexy voice. It's like giving you bad news. What movie is that from? Because if you have someone that comes in and sounds like a drill sergeant giving you bad news, you're like, eh. If someone gives you bad news. You know what? I feel like taking a break. I want to play a tune. I think we're going to come back and do a short story from Abby Martin. And let me make sure I'm on the right one, queuing it up. See, when you run your own show, you got like, okay, I'm looking at my levels over here, checking out everything over there. This gives me a chance to kind of just slow my brain down here for a second and remind everybody that this is only my second show here at RadioInfluence.com. And I got to tell you, they are continuing to add more and more shows to their lineup. And I've got a really good feeling about this one. I really do, because we're all passionate about what we like to do here. I love doing compelling talk radio, keeping it entertaining, but I certainly don't want you to be bored when you listen to the topics I talk about. And we do hit to all fields, believe me. I am a versatile. Who knows? I might just roll in one night and just want to do a Twitter battle of the best classic rock bands, and I'll play DJ. I do get a fire in my ass, and sometimes I completely let the show steer itself. But I'm also part of a network of a lot of people that have that same mentality, and that's what's so good about when I listen to the different shows, is they don't come in all rigid. Tonight we're going to talk about the MMA. You know, they're like, you know, if something's working, go with it. If you go off topic for a while, and you're talking about how you just cut your baby, your little pinky with your new brand new edger. You're trying to be Mr. Macho in your front yard. And it's a funny story. Go with it. Rock it, baby. That's excellent talk radio. And I really do feel that
as I listen to more and more of these programs. Now, granted, I've already worked with some of these people in terrestrial radio already. I've already been in the same building as them and collected the same crappy paycheck as they had. But you know what? They love what they did. They got kicked out the door, too. I got kicked out the door. So we literally, I know Rudolph's coming up. We really are the island of misfit toys. And I'm going to say I'm Charlie in the Box right now. Okay? That's my claim. Charlie in the Box. So nobody wants to play with you. Charlie in the Box. Yeah. So that's me. Everybody else here, Radio Influence, you can be the squirt gun that squirts grape jelly or the choo-choo train with square wheels, but I am Charlie in the Box. Make a note. Because you know why? I'm the oldest fart on this network. I think I am. I don't think there's, I'm 54. I don't think there's anybody here at Radio Influence that's older than I am. So I am the original seven-year-old staring at the TV 1 foot away watching Rudolph for the first time on television. I can honestly say that. That the first time it came on, I was actually old enough to see it. How about that? So I'm Charlie in the Box. Don't like it? Too bad. Too bad. When we come back, we're going to do probably one more story from Abby Martin. You know what? I want to do a Carlin's Corner, too. So you know what? Here's what we'll do. We'll do a tune here. This time around, we'll play a band out of Connecticut, believe it or not. Or is it Washington, D.C.? Now, they play gigs in Connecticut all the time. They're called the Political Animals. And what is so cool about them is the front man just a great MC. But if you listen to this track, you'll realize the female bass player and a drummer. That's it. No guitar. No keyboard. Just their front man and them. And it's called Blast the Bass. What we do a lot of here on Dangerous Conversation, as my show has now floated to a different network, is we give the people that, I don't know, they've got a little bit more bravado in their lyric. They care a little bit more about the world or the planet. Maybe they're socially conscious. Maybe they ask questions. Maybe they're controversial. Maybe they don't want to kiss some record company ass and damage their product. That's who we play on this show. The unsigned bands. Some rock bands here. There's a metal band out of Canada we're going to play for you next week. I got some hip hop here. I've got straight ahead rock bands. I've got a little bit of everything. If you're new to Dangerous Conversation, we're going to turn you on to a lot of different musical acts, because I was a rock jock for 24 years, first 24 years of my radio career. That's what I did. And yeah, that's a book in the making. I can remember half of it. So I'll tell you what, we'll hit a break on the other side of the Political Animals. We'll do some Carlin's Corner for you, and then we'll come back, and that'll still give us a good 20, 25 minutes. I got some more audio I want to get to tonight. Dangerous Conversation as we roll on right here on RadioInfluence.com. Scott
Ledger. Hey, this is Trip from Orlando. You're listening to Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
I mean, this is a gab fest. Yuck, 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 yuck.
Dangerous Conversation.
Hey, Old Man River, zip it or I'll break your hip.
Scott Ledger.
But I haven't tried my Wolfman Jack Lady's shaver yet.
One, two, check. Yeah.
You gon' feel us when we gone like a phantom limb.
see the grand stick. Girl, you living in the lane of shit. What? You not handling the flammable, super lyrical, manable cannon. I'm camping, calling shenanigans on inorganic, robotic, mechanical mannequins. Stand for the same shit. What? Hip hop, we decided what's what. On the play button, we live and uncut. Hip hop, we decided what's what. Turn up the treble, bring that music down to the underground level. Fast the bass, turn up the treble, bring that music down. Everyone in here, let me get up in your ear. Spreading love and cheer to anyone that cares. Enemies beware, though I'm never unaware. Think you whipping up the bread and butter, better come prepared. Steady wanna fear when I'm ready, doesn't dare. Steady wants a spear, but it's steady just a square. Predator is entering your end, it's almost near. Sentence in the air, selling up the scared. Running from the trembling, you trembling in fear. Now the son is mother gonna shed another tear. Web is spun together, you forever stuck in air. Selling out your image, I'm a pleasure in your fear. Staring up the steps while we're stepping up the stairs. Tearing up the set with the record of the year. Thinking about the rear, the head of us is clear. No why, how, will, if, where, what, where. Yo, blast the bass, turn up the treble. Bring that music down to the underground level. Blast the bass, turn up the treble. Bring that music down, come on.
Show.
You're out on the ledge.
He puts his arms around you. You can't see him, but you feel his presence.
Ledger.
My parents used to go, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Would you think for yourself?
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
Ledger.
I remember them all, and I love every one of them. Still love all my dogs, and I've had me a lot of goddamn dogs. In my lifetime, I have had me a bunch of different dogs. Because you do keep getting a new dog, don't you? You just keep getting one dog right after another. That's the whole secret of life. Life is a series of dogs. It's true, you just keep getting a new dog, don't you? That's what's good about them. They don't live too long. And you can go get a new goddamn dog. Sometimes you can get a dog looks exactly like the dog you used to have. Right? You shop around a little bit, you can find a dog identical to your former dog. And that's real handy because you don't have to change the pictures on your mirror or anything. Right? You just bring the dead one into the pet shop, throw him up on the counter, say, give me another one of them. That was real good. And they'll give you a carbon copy of your ex-goddamn dog. Now, my favorite dog that I ever had in my whole lifetime was Tippy. Tippy was a good dog. Some of you remember I've talked about Tippy. Tippy was a good dog. Tippy was a mixed terrier. You know that word mixed that the veterinarian puts on the form when even he don't know what the fuck you got? You bring in a little mixed puppy to a veterinarian and say, what is it? You say, well, it's definitely not a monkey. Tippy was actually part Dodge Dart. Poor Tippy was full of guilt. So much so, in fact, she's the only dog I ever had who committed suicide. Yeah, well, we don't say it like that around the house. We say she put herself to sleep. But she ran out in front of a milk truck. That's fucking suicide. But that was her decision. That's what Tippy wanted to do. And that's the way it is in our family. If you want to commit suicide, we back you up. So we supported Tippy in her little suicide decision. Then we brought her into the pet shop, threw her up on the counter and said, give us something bigger. We're trading up. We was looking for a bigger goddamn dog. Because Tippy had been teeny. Even before the truck came by. Truck had made her teenier. Wider, but teenier. And we was looking for a bigger goddamn dog. Not too big, you know. I don't like a dog who's bigger than I am. It's bad enough looking for shit in one direction without having to duck flying turds as well. A good rule of thumb is keep the dog's asshole below eye level. So So we compromised and we got us a mid-sized dog. Knee-high, just about like this size here. Best sized dog you can own, by the way. Most people know this is the ideal sized dog to have. You know why? Anybody comes to visit you, the first thing that dog does is take his nose and put it right in their crotch. Ooh. Ooh. He smells my dog. No, Marge, I don't believe that's the animal he has in mind. And people get embarrassed by that, especially the owner of the dog. The owner's the one who's saying, stop that, will you stop that now, stop it. I'm awfully sorry about this. Not me. I say, get in there and get some of that. Get in there, sniff that thing out. Go on. Listen, would you mind spreading your legs a little bit so he can get right in there? Yeah, stand like this for a little while, would you? Okay, looking good now. So how's your mom and dad doing anyway? Well, God bless them. It's a wonderful couple. So go around the back, check it out in the back now. Sniff that other thing in the back there. What's that? Well, there's two different smells he likes. What can I tell you, huh? Don't pay him no attention. He'll be finished in about a half an hour. So listen, Reverend, it's real nice of you to come and call on us like this. Every one of us is always glad to see you around here, especially that goddamn dog. Those dogs are great. They'll break the ice when a new neighbor comes to call. Hi, we're the Johnsons. What's his name? Ball Sniffer. He's a crotch hound. Let me know if you want to get circumcised. He's on duty till 5 o'clock. Dogs are a constant source of entertainment. Did you ever have a dog that ate cat turds? Some of them do. Some of you must know that. You ever have a dog eat cat turds? Yeah. Of course, you got to have a cat, you know. You can't be buying cat turds at the supermarket. But it's true, some dogs will eat cat turds. Yeah, don't let them lick you that day. Get a bottle of Listerine for them. Try to make him gargle. Pour it down his throat and tell him to howl. Come on, howl! Howl, goddammit! Stomp on his tail. Howl, I said, goddammit, howl! Oh, dogs are a lot of fun. Do you ever have a dog that ate a bunch of colored balloons and then he takes a shit and it's real decorative-like? But sometimes at Christmas, they'll eat some tinsel and take a shiny shit. Wow! Look, Mom, can we hang it on the tree? Well, it is considered good luck in some cultures. Here's a little household hint for you. This will help you clean up after your dog. Feed your dog a lot of rubber bands. Put a lot of rubber bands in with his regular food. Then when he takes a shit, there's usually a little loop on the end of it. You just pick it up by the loop. You know what I mean? Throw them in the neighbor's yard. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to DC.
This is Abby Martin from RTTV, Media Roots, Project Censored. And you're listening to Dangerous Conversations.
This is real radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Adam Armstrong from Rebel Inc., and you're listening to Dangerous Conversations.
Here's Ledge.
Hey, this is Chuck from Iowa. You're listening to Dangerous Conversations with the Ledge. And I'm almost high as a chemtrail.
Yeah. Here's Scott Ledger.
Having grown up as the youngest in a family of five, with my older siblings being 14, 15, and 16 years older than me, I still have a love of 50s and 60s music, because that's what their records were. And when they all moved out and went away, I had this giant stacks of 45 RPMs and albums from everybody from the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds to the Monkees. My family had good taste in music. I don't know. Later on, they got old and old. But I got to tell you, man, Every time I listen to like one of those 50s or 60s channels, I know so many of the songs because of my brother, Roy, and my sister, Susan, who just passed not too long ago, and my sister, Sharon. Because when they were growing up, they were watching American Bandstand. And they were, you know, babysitting me while Mom and Dad worked. So a lot of these rock instrumentals are just great. Absolutely great. Welcome back to Dangerous Conversation. Got about a half an hour left in the program. I want to do a couple more short pieces here. It's kind of reiterating tonight's theme is basically start visiting other locations. Just pick out four or five. And people ask me about Alex Jones all the time. And I would say this, in my own personal opinion, here's how this has played out. Alex started off as a very sincere, highly motivated seeker of truth. He educated a lot of people about some of the earlier false flags that are now provable, scientifically provable. He funded many documentaries. Of course, he probably made a buck or two. He's not like, you know, just giving his money away. Well, what happened was he blew up big, as we say in the business, and he became a network. And then he had employees. And then he had to worry about advertisers. And then as you move slowly away from what started off as a grassroots guy on public access TV to a man who has a network now, you can expect compromise. You can expect pandering to the core audience. I think this has a lot to do with the Muslim issue right now. I'm not here to judge him. I'm just giving you my take on what's taking place over there. But if you want to use that as one of your sources, absolutely. Why not? If you want to go to RT, if you want to go to, you know, a couple other good podcasts. It's not that Joe Rogan is some guru, but I'll tell you what, Joe's out there trying to figure out what's going on this planet, like you and I are. And he has a, you know, he's going to have the pull of being Joe Rogan to get some great guests. Just listen to Graham Hancock, who's like, he's getting to be his Ed McMahon. Graham Hancock is on Joe Rogan's podcast like every other week now. Hey now. Yeah, you know, go to different places. Don't just click on CNN because it's at the top of your browser and think so-and-so was shot by so-and-so people and then suddenly you're informed. You're not. You're definitely not. The other side of that coin is if you got a lot, you got kids and lives and bills, and you don't want to bite off anymore, don't waste your time listening to this podcast. This one's not for you. This is for people that can stomach some of this stuff. And they want to. They crave it. They're curious about the universe, about what religions told you you are, or a government has told you, or your history books. Who printed the history books? Who decided what went in those history books? Who redacted and edited those history books? Who, at the top of the food chain of that history book provider, decided that I didn't know shit about Nikola Tesla, but I knew a lot about Westinghouse or Edison? Well, nothing's changed except options. They can't control it. That's the best part of the new media. Some of it's a little wacko. Some of it's way over the top. Some of it comes to a conclusion in 2 seconds. But you know what? It's all part of the mix. They're all part of that. I don't see as one is more important. Excuse me, one is more important than the other. I don't. If they come at you from the left, if they come at you from the right, at least there's a fifth, sixth, eighth opinion in the room instead of the red and the blue. And the Democrat and the Republican, let's open this thing up. Let's get the libertarians' voices. Let's get the Tea Partier voices. Let's get everybody's voices. I don't care if you're a fucking racist asshole. You get a voice because your voice, well, we'll point you out to us and we'll go, oh, yeah, that guy's a racist asshole. But at least you'll have a voice. We can wean you guys out. And I don't mean make you completely get out of the matrix, but you're not going to be considered in decision making moving forward on planet Earth, where it's about prosperity for the many. And that's not where we're headed. We're not headed for prosperity for the many. We're headed to giant empires for the few. And it doesn't end well. And the history books that did tell you about how Greece caved in and how Rome caved in under the weight of their own hubris, under the weight of their own egos. I mean, it literally is taking place again, where more and more people are now learning the truth about a lot of things. But you got to want it. If you don't, you know, we're not for you. We're a great network here at Radio Influence. There's a lot of great shows. But maybe you just need to, you know, like talk Jimmy Superfly Snuka. I could talk some old school wrestling, by the way. Because I'm hopefully in the next couple of weeks be stopping in on some of the other great shows on this network. And hopefully eventually we'll line up an entire show of Dangerous Conversation where I get all of those guys on this show. It might be some pre-taped stuff, but we'll do an entire, you know, reaching out to everyone at RI and coming this way towards me. We're going to get them all on. Absolutely. This is my new family. Got to get to know my crazy family. So I'm looking forward to that. But I hope you'll add this podcast to a list of, you know what? Ledge had a great guest on the other day, Kara Santa Maria. She was a neuroscientist. She's an atheist. And Ledge was kind of going back and forth with her about this thing called the near-death experience. And it was really good conversation. That's my goal. It's always been my goal. It always will be my goal. That's what I do. I don't make you think. I make you curious enough to go out and do it yourself. And that's the goal. You can have a different take than me. I can have a different take than you. What's important is you're out there doing it on your own. Making up your own mind about shit. Forming your own opinions. And it happens generally, I knew I shouldn't even have attempted that word. Generationally, there we go. It just happens. Younger people are going to reject at least some of what grandpa or great grandpa thought the world should be. You're seeing dramatic shifts in our planet, especially with social issues, human sexuality issues. Look at what this new pope is trying to do to that religion. There is a lot of massive change taking place. You know why? People are becoming aware. Consciousness is growing. It's growing on an individual level, and it's growing as a group. Abby Martin started with her brother, Robbie, over at You know what? I'm not even going to mention the website until I get it right. I was lucky enough to have her on just before she got her gig at RT. She's now quit that job and is out doing, I mean, she's on a couple other networks and doing her own thing again. This is a small piece she did, just two shorts with a co-producer. And it's really just a couple more mentions of how stories can be manipulated in the media. We good to go? Let's do it.
Abby Martin is an anchor for RT. She made a bold and courageous move the other day, and she said that she does not agree with the Russian invasion of Crimea. She said it on air on RT, which is run by the Russian government.
This is Young Turks. That's Cenk Uygur from the Young Turks.
So that was very bold, and she's gotten a lot of attention for that.
Which is kind of neat that this is a new media outlet talking. Okay, wait a minute. I'm a new media outlet. So I'm a new media outlet playing audio from another new media outlet to a video from a Russian television network. That's what you need. You need that crazy web of connection where lots of people can get news sources that are just more than two. How the fuck do we have two choices when it comes to how our countries run? How does that work? Unless that's planned. It is planned. This is how you get around it.
And well-deserved. So she went on Piers Morgan with on CNN and had a discussion about this. A couple of things she said I thought were right on, and then I love the ending of the interview. So let's watch this clip first.
I mean, are you concerned about other parts of the programming on RT America? I mean, do you believe that although your show may have that kind of independence of voice, that a lot of the other programming doesn't and has drifted in the last week into blatant propaganda?
appears no different than every other corporate media station. I mean, we're talking about six corporations that control 90% of what Americans see, hear, and read. The lead up to the Iraq war, parroting exactly what the establishment said. I mean, you could reflect the exact same criticism on all the corporate media channels. So, you know, I can only speak for my show. I stay true to my moral compass, but RT toes a perspective of the Russian foreign policy, just as the entire corporate media apparatus toes the perspective of the U.S. establishment.
See, that's called getting it right. Being honest about both sides, about both news sources. Now, think about that. I wish MSNBC was dramatically different than Fox, and Fox was dramatically different than ABC, because there was diversity in opinion, and there was many new producers out there going, let's do a story on this. Okay, this is a little bit taboo. Let's do this story at night. Let's do what news gathering is. Let's gather opinions, but not anymore. Now it's all scripted, and that's just a damn shame, and it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. That's why I think, again, the Julian Assange movie is called The Fifth Estate. It's now The Fifth Estate. It used to be The Third. And then, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the man is a saint. I'm not saying anything and everything some of these people do does not cut corners. But have you noticed how we vilify the whistleblowers? These are the people that go behind bars, whistleblowers. Isn't that a little ass backwards for you? Because it is for me. In a republic or a democracy, it would literally be the other way around. The whistleblowers would be championed. And the lawbreakers, hint, 2008 bankers and large banking corporations, got away with murder. Sank mom, dad's retirement account, grandma are now working at McDonald's because they lost $250,000 in credit default swaps because they were lied to. No one's gone to jail. We are an ass backwards country. We prosecute whistleblowers and we give criminals a hall pass.
The reason I love that clip is because, number one, she's not being hypocritical. She's saying, look, RT does toe the line for the Russian perspective, but you guys toe the line for the establishment in America. And then she proves it with facts. And she's right. 90%, six corporations control about 90% of the American media. That's amazing. That's basically an oligopoly. And almost all of those corporations have enormous connections to the U.S. government. For example, Comcast, which owns NBC and MSNBC, is about to do a merger with the second largest cable operation, Time Warner Cable. Well, they need government approval for that. So they scratch the government's back, the government scratches their back, and around they go. And by the way,
update on that story, by the way, that did not go through. Remember when that story came out? This is an older piece of audio I'm playing, obviously, but it didn't go through.
They hire people that are in government, and they go back into government and go to corporations, government, revolving doors. She's totally right about that. Obviously, I worked on cable news, and I'm very familiar with that, and there's no question. Now, I'm going to give you one more perspective on that after we watch the next clip, because I liked Pierre's shocked reaction to this.
But I think that the real question that should be asked is, why do I have to work for RT to tell the truth about corporations and the U.S. government?
Why do you have to go to the Internet as a broadcaster to be able to ask open-ended questions about highly suspicious events? Why do we have to be at the Island of Misfit Toys? Why isn't corporate radio going, man, this is some really good content? I'll tell you why. Because where are you going to fit me? Right in between the guy on the left who's blaming the right for everything and the guy on the right who's... This show doesn't exactly fit. That's why it's destined to take place here. Maybe monetized by the middle or end of next year. But the whole concept of Dangerous Conversation, of course, it's not just me monologuing, which I've done a lot of in the last couple of weeks because I just needed to get back at my craft. It's been a while. So now that I've been doing on a regular basis, we're going to kind of have a little fun, a little bit towards the holidays. We'll have some fun. And then after the first of the year, everybody will be booked solid and will be pretty guest heavy. Some of you that know the history of this show when it used to be on a different network, and you know some of the regulars, they'll be back. You know some of the crew, they'll be back. You know some of the semi-regular guests. These will all be people in rotation in 2016 for Dangerous Conversation right here at Radio Influence. And I know I'm a little teasing you, but I will say, yeah, there's some whistleblowers in there. Some people that actually completely derailed their life because their conscience wouldn't let them do anything else. And those are real heroes to me. These are people that really are risking something. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me going into the military and what takes place in the middle of a war. What I'm talking about is your life's just ticking right along, and suddenly you realize something is a huge lie, or somebody or many people might be in danger or physical harm, or they could get sick, and you decide to speak out. And instead of our country treating you like someone with a set of balls, we treat you like a pariah. We are an ass backwards country. We want one thing, but we don't reward the courage of a whistleblower. We just don't. We make fun of them. Mainstream media completely crucifies the person who points out a war crime. There was something called Winter Soldier. Google it. You want to know the other side of a story? You want to know how some of the soldiers that came back from Iraq and Afghanistan might have something different to say? Do you want to know it? Because if you're saying no, you're listening to the wrong show. If you do, Google Winter Soldier. And yes, it's tied into the same thing that happened in Nam. You want to know how young men break down on a stage and cry as they recount what they did or had to do or were ordered to do in a war zone? Believe me, I sympathize with the soldier, not the assholes that send them there. But the whistleblower, we need more whistleblowers. We need more people that have the courage to step up and go, no, my company's polluting the river. My kids drink that water. I'm going to the newspaper, and I don't care if it costs me my job. It matters more. Our country wants to be a country of character, but we're not demonstrating it. We need to start rewarding these people. If you're a whistleblower and it comes to a crime, or if you're someone who had a film of a cop shooting, and you're afraid to turn it in because you are going to end up all over the news, and you're afraid to get involved, you won't be the first person to say no. You won't be the first person to say, I can't handle this, and I choose not to. But you know what? Some people have the balls to say something uncomfortable and very truthful in a crowd of people, and they're not looking for friends, and they're not looking for acceptance. They realize that if our world, our societies, plural, and our race is going to get from point A to point B, we're going to have to do it like the Oracle says in the Matrix. Neo, I believe in one thing, and that's the future. And the only way to get there is together. Because if we keep the separation, if we keep being afraid of our neighbor, if we keep finger pointing at everybody, we're not going to get there. It's going to get worse. Each generation is going to get worse. And technology won't save you. A lot of people think that, just give me a couple new gadgets and I'll be happy. It doesn't work that way. Why do you think you want a new phone every 8 months? Do you really need a new phone? No, you just want one. Why? It's because there's a new one coming out. And I'll feel great for a whole week. Woo-hoo! Sometimes I think we're just a generation of circus monkeys, just waiting for the peanut. If you care about things, there's a lot to absorb. I always say choose one or two you're passionate about, dive down that rabbit hole, learn something, and tell other people.
and have a third opinion. And don't be afraid to express it. Pick your poisons, pick your spots. Maybe passing the gravy in the middle of Thanksgiving dinner isn't time to drop Building 7 info on Grandpa. But there is a time to talk to another human being about things that really matter, not Kim Kardashian's big round fake ass. Kind of like Abby Martin does.
I mean, seriously, you guys are beholden to advertisers that you cannot criticize. And that's why I work for a station that I can criticize.
Well, hang on. I'm free to say, well, the hell I like. Sure. No one's ever told me I can't criticize advertisers or corporate entities. That conversation has never happened in the 3 years I've been on air at CNN.
Fair enough, Piers. But I think a lot of people deal with self-censorship all across the media spectrum.
It's a very important part as we wrap tonight's show up. Self-censorship. We all do it. Honey, does my ass look fat in these jeans? Oh, that's a really tough. Oh, how do I get it right? I can't get to it. I gotta say something. What the fuck? I feel so trapped. No. Of course not. We all self-censor. We do it when we're just about ready to just do that 1 a.m., you know. You're just drunk enough. Maybe you're a little high, a little horny, and you typed a really hot paragraph of sexting, and you're about to click send, and you get to that point of no return. If I press send, I can't undo this. So there's only one way to go. Or do I self-censor, hit clear, shut my phone off, and go to bed? We're all self-censors. I know I am. And I talk for a living. I like that. How crazy is that? So, yeah, we're going to wrap it up a little early here tonight. Again, thanks to Jerry P-Tuck, and thanks to Jason. Because what they've done here is they recognize that someone had built some decent framework to build a network around, and they're doing a great job. And I'm just glad to be part of this. I hope they keep adding more shows and more talent and more opinions. And I hope you realize that in the coming months, you're probably going to make sure that you tell other people about RadioInfluence.com, where it is a little bit of everything here. Oh, yeah, I just realized the Fabulous Sports Babe's older than me, because I said I was the oldest fart on this network, but Nancy's older than me. So I'm like number two. I don't care. I'm still the Charlie in the box. You don't like it, too bad. That's how it works. I am officially the Charlie in a box. As I say goodnight, I want to just, I don't know, maybe drive home one more point that is very, very important to me, is that have a passion in your world. Okay, you can be, I don't care if you fly model airplanes or if you like bass fishing or if you, you know, just maybe it's, you know, you love being a dog owner. Have passion and don't get too caught up. When you listen to shows like this and other shows, you have a tendency to view the world through a negative set of glasses because you can concentrate on who the assholes are too much and how they do have a pretty good grip on the human race right now and how they're getting their way. But they're not always getting their way if you can enjoy the ride, as Bill Hicks likes to say. And that's why, by the way, we do Carlin's Corner. Is because one of the last bastions of truth tellers that are actually entertaining is, I should say, was, when I talk about Carlin and Hicks, and is, when I talk about guys like Stanhope or Joe Rogan, one of the last bastions of a place where you can go and step outside the boundaries of this normal world that everybody thinks is going on and have an intelligent, articulate, and very good critical viewpoint on a stage that makes you laugh your ass off, and by the time you get out of there, you're thinking different about things, at least a couple of topics. So have a passion. My passion used to be rock radio, being at concerts, living that lifestyle. My passion now is just asking a lot of questions out loud. I love doing podcasts. I love not having to answer to a boss or a program director or a salesperson or anybody else about any of the content you hear here. And I think one of the best things about being able to be your own boss, and yeah, by the way, I'm definitely recognizing the buzz in the mic. It's an issue that showed up last night. It will be gone by next week, I guarantee you that. So I appreciate your patience with that as well. I'm looking on Twitter. But honestly, believe me when I say this, I'm only going to do as many shows as I will in a week and have it still be fun. Because I want to come in pumped to do a show if it's a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night or maybe a weekend show. There'll only be three. I can guarantee you that, but there'll only be three. That I want to enjoy this process. I love getting to know the new listener. I love it when they kind of recommend documentaries to me that I saw 10 years ago. But what kind of turns me on about that is people are starting to say, you know what? Me and my dad sat down and we watched, you know, Loose Change and Zeitgeist back to back, and now our mind is blown. Yeah, that's how it works. That's how it works. When new knowledge enters a paradigm, the paradigm has to change. There's no way around it. So that's why that scene in The Matrix, the blue pill, red pill scene, is an AB. There's no AC. There's no C. There's no D choice. You're either going to know or you're not going to know. But you have that choice. And if you are curious about the way the world works and science and quantum mechanics and spirituality and metaphysics and hallucinogenics and drugs and human sexuality, and, you know, those are some of the heavier topics. And then, yeah, I can talk family. I can talk friends and pets and fishing and baseball and sports. I'd like to think I can bring it. Be honest with you. And I hope you'll spread this podcast. I hope you'll just send it to one person and ask them to do the same thing. We'll let those algorithms take it over. You know, I'm looking to grow this show slowly, regain the audience it used to have, do a second show as I'm now doing, add a little bit more content and more interviews as the train pulls out of the station, and then eventually, yeah, DC will be three, probably in the mid to late spring, we'll add a third show. But we got a lot to do before then, a lot to do. Some of it's backtracking on some old stuff. Some of it is just getting to know everyone here at this network, and then having everyone look forward to, you know, just a couple hours of good old asking questions. I appreciate you guys hanging with me. Oh, wait a minute now. See, it's like, I wish I had, wait a minute now. Oh, that's oldies, that's why. Yeah, see. When you got to run your own board and you're trying to find your closing song, you can't find it, and you're like, where is it? I'm like, dead air. I appreciate you guys hanging out. Just to let everybody know of A, about radioinfluence.com, and of course this show. Okay. And I gotta tell you, I'm really looking forward to the process. The last chapter of my broadcast world is just me, my podcast, my guests, my listeners, and being part of a great radio broadcasting network. Or two. Or three. One way or the other. And I wasn't kidding about find a passion. Have some fun. You know, maybe you're in a rut at work. Maybe you're in a rut in a relationship. Maybe you're physically not in the best shape of your life. That's me. But find some passion. Find some things you care about. Spend some time doing them. And don't forget, man, it's a ride. It really is. You know, That's why Bill Hicks is probably had to check out early. He knew too much. He showed up, and all he had to do was make us laugh and check out. I'm not sure. Let me see. I'm going down the checklist. I don't have anything else to announce. Yeah, we're good. We won't add a guest until the week after next. And basically, that'll be some of the old crew, so you guys can get to know some of them as we do a little. It's going to be kind of a holiday show, a little reminiscing on some of the old DC shows, as well as basically just getting the band back together. That's right. Everybody have a good night, and we'll talk to you next week right here, Dangerous Conversation at RadioInfluence.com. See you.
Hey, you guys, it's me, the fabulous sports babe. How wonderful is that? I'm on Radio Influence, I'm on iTunes, I'm on Stitcher, and it's on a bunch of stuff that I can't get on my phone because I don't figure out how to do it. But if you want to do that, you get my lovely podcast now. You can go and do this, you can be mowing the lawn, you can go into the moon, you can do any of that stuff, and you can listen to the fabulous sports babe. I have a lot of people to talk to, because after all, that's what I do, is just annoy them all the time. It's the fabulous sports babe. It's right here on Radio Influence.